You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OHIOFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Not a fun day here in Ravens land tonight. The NFL season is starting in a 7-7 tie currently, but we have to talk about the Ravens injuries. And we spent a fair amount of time with Sarah Ellison. You may have heard it already. And tonight, Kyle Trimble joins us from Buffalo Country. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Ken. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you making the time for this, Kyle. So, we have the reason you're on here is because you have a background in sports injuries, and you could tell us a little bit about an ACL injury and what a player goes through when they have one.
So an ACL injury is an injury within the knee. It's the anterior cruciate ligament. This really helps prevent anterior translation of the tibia. So you have your femur, which is a thigh bone, your tibia, which is a shin bone. This prevents the tibia from shifting forward, and this helps keep the knee articulated together. This definitely helps out with your cutting motions, prevents from any laxity of the knee, and just allows you to do jumping, cutting, every activity that you need to in order to do sports appropriately. One final thought with that is the ACL has mechanoreceptors that allows your body to understand where you're at in space, so that when you're moving around, you can say, hey, I have to shift left, right, and your foot knows where to go in terms of where the knee's at. You're not just stepping and hoping that you take that next step and move on.
So that ligament communicates effectively to your foot to explain what's going on. It's communicating by its connections to the foot, right?
To the foot, to the brain, everything else like that. Okay. So all the connections come from the brain, and then everything's working in sync with each other. And when you don't have the ACL, if it's torn, then your body has to relearn how to do those fluid motions. And you or I, if we do this, it's not as big of a deal because we get that back. But in an NFL or NBA or MLB athlete, those split second decisions are what makes them the elite athlete versus your weekend warrior.
Okay. That's fascinating. That's something I never knew about the ACL and what its, you know, mechanical, usage was. That's interesting. So I always thought, you know, stability of the knee, and you've kind of gone in elements of that, but actual communication to the foot is an interesting, part of that. Tell us a little bit more now about what an athlete goes through when they tear an ACL. What are the steps they have to go through in that rehab process? You know, beginning with what they have to do to stabilize them, then surgery and whatever might come after that.
So initially when they tear the ACL, most of the time the athlete, they don't always know, but the trainers, orthopedic doctors, they know almost immediately on the field. They do what is called anterior drawer test, and they look for that anterior translation of the tibia. So they get the knee up in 90 degrees, and they pull on the shin bone, that tibia. And if they see that come out too far, then and they see that laxity, then they know that there is likely an ACL injury. They always do the MRI afterward to see how... Yeah, to confirm. But most of the time, they know exactly on the field what happened. They always do other tests, too, to see if there's any other ligament damage, such as the MCL, PCL. And then they're also sometimes checking that for the meniscus, because the MCL and meniscus do are commonly injured when an ACL is injured during the sport there.
Okay, so we've had some very serious knee injuries in Baltimore before. Nico Siragusa had, I believe, all three, ACL, PCL, MCL. I don't know what that might have involved in terms of the meniscus because I didn't hear it. But I know that was a very traumatic knee injury that was very difficult to recover from. What is the easiest type of ACL injury to recover from it?
Easy. It's either... Either you sprain it, which is really rare in general, or it's a partial complete tear where they have to do a reconstruction. So there's not really an easy recovery from an ACL. We did see with Ryan Tannehill a few years ago where he tried to come back from a partial tear, and it just didn't work for him. He ended up still missing the entire year even after trying to come back without surgery.
Yeah, it's probably insensitive of me to call it an easy, you know, tear or not, but are you better off just tearing your ACL as opposed to also having other things tear? Or is there any element of this that's like Tommy John surgery where it's almost like they hope a pitcher gets it at a certain age and that they can recover from it at that point as opposed to waiting to the major leagues for it to happen?
Age does play a part into when you have the ACL tear, but we've seen young players suffer the ACL tears and play, and we've seen older players suffer the ACL in return. So the age is a factor, but you brought up a good point with that. If you have an isolated ACL tear, you're going to have a better outcome than we see when there is a associated meniscus, MCL, PCL, but sometimes LCL. When there's multi-ligament damage in there, then that's when you start seeing bigger problems. I know Nick Boyle, I believe your guys' tight end last year, mm-hmm. had a real serious knee injury, and he tore multiple ligaments in there. So I haven't seen where he's at, but I know that I'm sure he's still working his way back. And we've seen another former Ravens running back, Willis McGahee. He came back from his devastating knee injury to play in Buffalo and then ventured to Baltimore. But he took a good year and a half to really get back. And then even then, he wasn't quite back to normal. So we do see how those isolated tears can be more simple or easy rather than some of the complex tears. And we see how effective they are when they come back.
All right. All right. Now, in terms of how a player would rehab through this, what are kind of the stages in terms of building that knee back up?
The first stage is really just trying to control a swelling, minimize the pain, regain some of that range of motion, and you're really trying to protect the surgical area. They will take either a graft from the patellar tendon, which connects the front of the tibia and the patella in the front, or sometimes they'll take a hamstring tendon graft, and they'll put that into the knee in the same location where the ACL was. Sometimes the fibers are still there that they can sew it up with that so that it can help kind of heal back more naturally, and you get some of those mechanoreceptors in there. But sometimes they had to clean that stuff out, otherwise there's problems. So they had to put that back in there, and then they're just trying to make sure that that graft heals properly. They don't want to create any laxity in there or have it at the wrong angle, because then if it's at the wrong angle, then it won't function properly. Then you still got a screwed up knee after all that rehab.
Okay, so that's interesting. So I think of a graft as being a more complex procedure. I guess they're getting better at it. Do they graft exclusively from the same person, or are they able? I remember the case of Carson Palmer. He used somebody else's. I think it was Carson Palmer. Maybe I have the wrong athlete.
It very well could be Carson Palmer. They've done it with a lot of people. They're seeing the allograft, autograft. They've used other things too, such as they've tried synthetics and some other materials, but they found that either you harvest from the patellar tendon or the hamstring tendon, or they take it from a cadaver, and those have seemed to be the best outcomes in return to play.
Okay. So cadaver, that was what I recall for Carson Palmer, was it was from a cadaver, or maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was another Bengals quarterback or another Bengals player that had it done, but it might have been Palmer. In any case, that's some fascinating stuff. Now the surgery, once the surgery is complete, then what are the steps after that to try and get the player healthy again?
So going back to that first stage here, you're registering to protect the area. You're trying to reduce the swelling because the body goes into the inflammation phase. This, even though the ACL injury has occurred and then surgery, which is a planned procedure, occurs, the body still goes into that inflammation phase where it goes into wanting to protect the area, wants to begin healing. So there's going to be a lot of fluid that causes inflammation to the area and it begins the healing process. So we want to make sure that doesn't get out of control and that swelling hinders that range of motion and the proper healing in the area. So you want to make sure that just you get things calmed down in there and make sure that you start working, make sure that you can do your basic stuff around the house. And then you slowly start working on getting the quadricep turned back on, going back to the inflammation phase, the body wants to shut everything down as a protective measure and doesn't allow things that you don't want to work through and cause further injury. So we found through rehabilitative techniques that if we start turning some of those muscles back on, even through isometrics such as quadriceps, get the calf muscle working again, the hamstrings, this allows things to turn back on and prevent it from atrophying, causing further problems. We did see, like, for example, Saquon Barkley, he's coming back from his ACL recovery himself. He has a smaller quadricep on the affected side compared to the other side. Now he's going to play week one, but we do see where the muscle does atrophy because of that protective measure of the body trying to heal itself.
Interesting. Okay. What kind of inflammation reduction can you use? I know I've had certain things happening where I've had a muscle in my neck or whatnot. And one of the things that had to be done was they had to give me steroids to just calm down the area first. And is how they described it. I was wondering if that was part of anti-inflammation or is that maybe that's not allowed by NFL rules, or how would they treat that? Cold, or what would you do?
They would definitely use ice, compression, elevation, gravity assisted, just getting that leg up. That really helps shunt some of the excess fluid back toward the heart, and that allows it to pump it out there. Massage, ankle pumps, as simple as it is, that active motion of the ankle flexes the calf and moves it, and that helps pump some excess fluid out of there. And just work on the range of motion. The fluid is going to go where there's any free space in that knee. So if we keep that knee moving and act like a pump, it can keep that fluid out of there. And then just doing the exercise as well, trying to turn things back on, that lets the knee know that, hey, we're trying to get working through this, and that's just not a protective measure, and that the swelling is going to settle around there and not allow you to move.
Okay. Now, as you go further along in the rehab, I've always heard it said the athlete needs to be able to trust that the injury is healed itself. What is meant by that statement?
It's really a mental thing when it comes to this. So they were doing something they had done countless times before, and then that one particular time that caused them to have an injury. So when you go back out there again, what's stopping them from thinking, oh my God, could this happen again? So there's really a mental block because they don't think about running. They don't think about cutting. They just do it. Now they have to think about it. So now there's that extra step, that split second thing that they took for granted. Now they have to put effort into thinking about what they have to do. And sometimes there's that hesitation saying, hey, I don't know whether I can do this with confidence. So we see that as a big hurdle for some athletes coming back. Some athletes have dealt with injuries before and say, hey, I know I can work through this. I trust what my therapists and my surgeons have done. And other ones are saying, hey, I've been invincible up to this previous point. Now I've had this injury and I don't have the confidence I can get back to where I need to. So we see sports psychologists get involved. We see there's a lot of just trust factors. So there's a lot more goes into it than just the physical rehab itself.
I was wondering, so it really is mental as opposed to a muscle memory thing, or I was even wondering if there would be, you know, ligament memory in some sense, but we've seen Justin Houston mentoring younger Ravens pass rushers. And one thing he does is he tries to do a lot of his reps against the dummy blind. So he knows he's getting his hand motions down without really thinking about it. Is there any of that that's possible with recovering from an ACL tear that would help that? Or is that, are we talking apples and oranges really in this case?
No, I'd say we're talking apples to apples here. So when you start getting the later aspects of the rehab process, trying to go through those different techniques, just even step ups or sidestepping or running, you want to make sure that your pattern is consistent and that it's not going to be inhibiting problems later on. As simple as running on the treadmill, you want to make sure you're striking with your heel and pushing off on your toe. If you are not getting full extension and hitting more of your midsole and pushing off, that might inhibit the ability to fully push off the leg when you need it for sprinting later on. So looking at those minor biomechanical changes that happen with the ACL recoveries, of course, this goes for any injury, you want to make sure that everything else is working as properly as it was before, and you don't have to think about that stuff. When you have to start thinking about how you're altering your movements, that's when it's not crisp and clear, and then you might falter because that's not an automatic movement for you like it used to be.
Mm-hmm. How about, is there any kind of a hallmark that tells you an athlete's back and fully recovered from the ACL, and just something you look for? Maybe is there any indicator for that?
There's a few different indicators. You look at for what the strength testing is compared to one side or the other. You look at single leg squatting. You look at the hamstring, glute medius, glute maximus strength. Those are just the different muscles in lower extremity that can help you identify the power there. They have the exact name of it is escaping me, but they can test how much power you're putting through your knee kicking and bending to see how it is equal to the other side. There's hop testing. There's also just a questionnaire, because that kind of gets in the mental aspect of how do you feel about this stuff. So they've gotten a lot better with this stuff than they did 30 and 40 years ago, where it was frankly the dark ages when it came to ACL recovery. So they have a lot of standardized metrics and outcomes that allow them to say this player is ready based off these outcome measures we have that have been proven and backed by science, and allows them to get them back out in the field with confidence.
Okay. Outstanding stuff. Has there been any improvement in terms of the amount of time over the last, say, 5 to 10 years of recovery from an ACL?
I'm not sure about time. I know the techniques have gotten better. They've just gotten better understanding when they can initiate certain techniques. And for example, open versus closed chain. Open chain being, let's say, kicking your leg out and there's your foot's not connected to anything, such as the ground. Closed chain being like a squat where you might be bending your knee, but it's all connected from the floor all the way up. So they're getting better understanding of how much tension is on the ACL when you're doing these movements. If they can bump up some of these activities sooner, then this could allow them to get back. Another thing they've been doing more recently is blood flow restriction training. Basically what that says is, hey, you can't do these certain activities with a joint, but we can train the muscle under anaerobic conditions, and they can allow that to get more of a maximal contraction with less effort there. So they put a cuff over the muscle, and they have you do, let's say, 30% of what your one rep max would be. And that allows you get similar benefits. So let's say you're doing as much as you can with that quadricep before. So really you're doing more with less, and that allows you to build back quicker rather than having to wait for the joint to be, or the ligament to be, fully healed before you can jump out to the next step. So they're finding little ways to kind of bypass certain things to allow them to get back sooner.
Okay. I think the $64,000 question for people in Baltimore is, had a lot of ACL injuries, frankly, over the last few years, going back to, well, really since about 2015. What science is there to try and avoid these at a better rate? Is there much on that yet?
There is a lot on that. They look at the footwear. There's trying to find that balance between, you know, you don't want cleats that stick too much, because if the foot sticks in the ground when they're trying to pivot, it's going to get stuck, and then it's going to put too much stress through the knee. So they want to make sure that they have materials on the shoes that don't stick too much to the turf. They've also found that turf versus grass, the grass is more forgiving, and that the foot's not going to stick there. They find that warm-up programs do help with getting the knee and the body is in itself kind of primed to get moving, and then they're not going to be doing 0 to 100 right away. They've tried some bracing. Bracing doesn't help as much. You see that on the offensive lineman, but that's more due to like a direct contact ACL injury. Mm-hmm. But some of the non-contact stuff is just trying to understand and be proactive about things. So if they can do screening and say, hey, you're landing funny, or hey, you're not jumping evenly, can we train on that so that when you are landing or cutting, you're not overloading the one area and then you're, you know, busting your ACL because you weren't training properly, because that's just kind of what you were doing before. So they try to look for patterns, see if they can avoid.
Is that something they can do before the first ACL injury, or is it something you usually do for someone who's already had an ACL injury? Maybe there's a big fear that they'd be favoring, say, the other knee.
They can do it before. So if there's a risk for some reason, or they could just do a general screening. The fact they, for women's soccer, they do that a lot. They do a lot of screening, they do warm up programs, and they found that really reduces that there. So they could take what they found in women's soccer, transfer it over to those other sports, and they have similar outcomes from what I've seen in the research, because these warm up programs can reduce the incidence. It's not going to eliminate it, but it can reduce it.
Okay. Is there anything in recent current medical contents or whatever that would tell you that there are new treatments on the horizon that are going to be breakthroughs? I assume sports is probably right on the cutting edge of everything with regard to ACL repair.
I've seen some different stuff over the years. It's one of those things that you see it, you're like, oh, how cool. And then you don't hear about it again for a while. So I don't know that there's anything that says, you know, boom, this is going to be the game changer. I think if they could find a way to reattach the ligament that was torn as a whole, I think that could help increase the return rate, because then you're then sewing the ACL together instead of having to cut out what's left of the torn ACL and put a new one in, and the body has to relearn how to turn that tendon into a ligament. So if they can figure out how to rejoin that ligament instead of having to replace it, then I think that could increase it. And then there is some stuff, I think, out of Boston that was doing that, but I haven't seen anything where saying, hey, this is the new approach and scrap everything else.
All right, Kyle, outstanding stuff. Thank you for joining us. This is a wonderful thing. Tell folks where people can read your work normally.
So I'm all over the place. I am at Banged Up Bills on Twitter. I cover Buffalo Bills football primarily, but I also do work over at The Game Day, which is a sports betting fantasy site. I contribute to Buffalo Rumblings, the SB Nation site, Cover One. They do a little bit of everything with regards to betting, more fantasy, video film breakdown. I do some hockey stuff with Die by the Blade. I'm kind of just all over the place with injury content, but I'm willing to talk about football. And if the Ravens are playing the Bills, which we both hope they kind of are in the playoffs at some point, you can come to my site, bangedupbills.com. You will find every publicly reported injury of every Bill going back as far as I can find them. And you can see what their injury history is, who's going to play that week, who isn't, and just breakdowns each and every week of what is what is happening with the Bills. So I would want to say I'm the foremost injury authority when it comes to Buffalo Bills outside of the team itself.
All right. Well, then you can't expect them to be telling the truth about what's going on necessarily.
No, but I try to see through what the,
there you go,
read between the lines with them.
There you go. All right, Kyle, thanks so much for joining us. Outstanding material. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.